Saturday morning breakfast was one of my meals to work the dish line in Holyoke. It was a good meal to have because the Commons was never busy on Saturday mornings. Carol Gerber, the silverware girl, stood at the head of the conveyor belt. I was next. My job was to grab the plates as the trays came down the belt, rinse them, and stack them on the trolley beside me. If traffic on the conveyor belt was busy, as it was at most weekday evening meals, I just stacked the plates up, shit and all, and rinsed them later on when things slowed down. Next in line to me was the glass boy or girl who grabbed the glasses and cups and popped them into special dishwasher grids. Holyoke wasn't a bad place to work. Every now and then some wit of the Ronnie Malenfant sensibility would return an uneaten kielbasa or breakfast sausage with a Trojan fitted over the end, or the oatmeal would come back with, "I go to fuck you," written in carefully torn up strips of napkin. Once, pasted on the surface of a soup bowl filled with congealing meatloaf gravy, was the message, "Help, I am being held prisoner in a cow college." And you wouldn't believe what pigs some kids can be. Plates filled with ketchup, milk glasses filled with mashed potatoes, splattered vegetables. But it really wasn't such a bad job, especially on Saturday mornings. I looked out once past Carol, who was looking extraordinarily pretty for so early in the morning, and saw Stoke Jones. His back was to the pass-through window, but you couldn't miss the crutches leaning next to his place, or that peculiar shape drawn on the back of his jacket. Skip had been right. It looked like a sparrow track. It was almost a year later when I first heard some guy on TV refer to it as the track of the great American chicken. "Do you know what that is?" I asked Carol, pointing. She looked for a long time, then shook her head. "Nope, must be some kind of in-joke." "Stoke doesn't joke." "Oh my, you're a poet and you don't know it." "Quit it, Carol. You're killing me." When our shift was over, I walked her back to her dorm, telling myself I was just being nice, that walking Carol Gerber back to Franklin Hall in no way made me unfaithful to Anne-Marie Soucy back in Gates Falls. Then ambled toward Chamberlain, wondering who might know what that sparrow track was. It occurs to me only at this late date that I never thought of asking Jones himself. And when I reached my floor, I saw something that changed the direction of my thoughts entirely. Since I'd gone out at 6:30 a.m. with one eye open to take my place behind Carol on the dish line, someone had shaving creamed David Dearborn's door, all around the sides, on the doorknob, and with an extra thick line along the bottom. In this lower deposit was a bare foot track that made me smile. Deary opens his door, clad only in a towel, on his way to the shower, and poosh, how are ya? Still smiling, I went into 302. Nate was writing at his desk. Observing the way he kept one arm curled protectively around his notebook, I deduced it was that day's letter to Cindy.